Welcome to A Quiet Life. I'm your host, Ruth Amos. 1 Thessalonians 4 says, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. In this podcast, I chat to all sorts of normal Christians, asking them just how they live their quiet lives and how they integrate their faith into their daily lives. I hope that by listening, you will be encouraged to go out and live your own quiet life to the glory of God. You can find the episode show notes, the Quiet Life blog, and other resources at ruthamos.com.au. That's ruthamos.com.au. Now let's get on with the show. Hello, I'm Ruth, the host of A Quiet Life. It's good to have you here. It's good to be here with you. This is episode 55 of A Quiet Life, and as I record this, it is Wednesday the 26th of February. It was a beautiful sunny day yesterday, and today it's raining, and I went for my morning walk in the rain. And actually, it was really nice. Today's episode is an interview with Eric, and it's a thought-provoking and possibly controversial episode. So I just want to lay down out front that I don't agree with everything that Eric said about world politics or philosophies, but I do agree with him that we can't just ignore politics. We can't just stick our heads in the sand and hope that the world will run the way that we want it to. I think, like Dietrich Bonhoeffer, I think it's important that we stay informed as much as we can handle it. I know that politics is quite a difficult arena for people, and some people just really can't watch the news because it's too depressing, and fair enough. But as much as you can handle, stay informed, and at the very least, pray for our leaders and for the leaders of the world nations. Pray about the issues and ask God for his wisdom. I think it would be the most wonderful thing, and I know at this point it would take a miracle, if Christians in politics and Christians around the world could model respectful dialogue, could model listening to each other in order to understand each other's point of view, could model being able to disagree with one another and still love each other and still act lovingly towards each other, I think that would be the best possible outcome. So anyway, as you listen to Eric, whether you completely agree with him or completely disagree, I hope that you can listen to understand his point of view. And I really encourage you to keep listening right to the very end of the interview, because there's some beautiful stories of God working in his life just at the very end after we get through all the tricky stuff. Anyway, I may be making too much of this, and I'm sorry if I am. And Eric is a very good friend, and I was really, really pleased and blessed to be able to chat with him. Just a couple of other things I wanted to talk to you about. I retweeted something that someone called C.E. White Books on Twitter had tweeted, and she had put up a YouTube clip of hers about being an introvert in the church and about using your gifts that are your gifts to bless the church instead of trying to fit yourself into someone else's mold. And so we had a bit of a conversation after that, because it was a very good clip. I'll put it in the show notes next week when I'm doing the Saying No book. But she said that she and her husband, who is also an introvert, used to have a flow chart for saying yes or no to things they were asked to do. I think that's a really good idea. I'm trying to think if I can come up with my own flow chart to help me to say no more often. And the other thing I wanted to say was that my friend Sandessa told me she listened to the podcast while she was rearranging her furniture and got all up to date with all of the interviews that she'd missed. And it was a good way to keep her mind busy while she was rearranging furniture. And so I wondered what you were doing while you are listening to me. Are you listening at the gym? Are you listening in your car? I'd love to know. Drop me a line. You can tweet me at A Quiet Life. You can send me an email at ruth@ruthamos.com.au. You can find me on Facebook at Ruth Amos Author. What do you do while you listen to this podcast? I would love to know. Anyway, that's enough chatter. Let's have a listen to this interview with Eric. Today's guest is Eric, and Eric and I are a long, long time friends, like almost family. Yeah. And you must have been 5 and a half.
Something like that.
When Eric's family came over from England. And yeah, we've been friends sort of like, you know, those friends that you don't see each other for multiple years and then get back together and you're friends again. So we've talked a lot in the past, but not really recently. And I wrote down that
recently being the last 20 years or so.
Oh, yeah. But I'm very interested in hearing Eric's answers to these questions. And I know from Facebook that I don't agree with all of your opinions on everything, so it could be fun.
I should hope not.
So, yes. So, welcome, Eric. It's good to have you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
First things first, how did you become a Christian?
That's a really good question. When I was three-ish, I used to hand out Bible colouring in books from my pushchair. So I've been a public nuisance now for quite some time, and for which I mostly blame my parents.
Absolutely.
You have to do these things. At that time, Mum and Dad ran a thing called Gate, God's Answer to Emptiness in the UK, and that was kind of a folk club music coffee thing run by Christians where people could come and talk about stuff. And I was, you know, very young at the time, but I guess one of my earliest memories is of, and I think it was probably at a Gate meeting, I don't really know. One of my earliest memories is of feeling very strongly what I now know to be the presence of God and wanting that.
Mm.
And it was below the level of cognition. I mean, I was too little to put any kind of framework or even talk about it, but I knew that that's what I wanted. And I think that's, for me, what it's been about. It's visceral. It's, you know, yes, I have an intellectual faith, but it's not about that.
Mm. Was there a time, you know, in your adult life where you had to make a choice? This, you know, crossing the line from this day forward, I'm going to be with God type of choice? Or has it just been always?
Usually before breakfast.
Fair enough.
I mean, yes, I mean, that's part of growing up. And so, I don't know how much you want to go into all of that, but I was brought up basically outside of the church and then left home at 17 and flatted, did the share house thing at uni with people who weren't Christians. And so, you know, I was sort of thrust out into the world very innocent and very unprepared, without going into too much detail. And so, yeah, I had to make some hard choices about what I was and wasn't going to do. And, you know, I drifted along in first year uni for a while, and God is, you know, gracious, and he allowed that drift for a period of time.
Mm.
And then there came a time when I got the message very clearly that I needed to make a choice. And, you know, I guess I'm not a James Bond fan, but I do agree with 007, the world is not enough.
Mm.
And I sort of looked at it and it wasn't enough for me.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. It's amazing. Oh, I don't understand how people don't live without the extra layer of meaning that you get from being with the Lord.
Well, some people don't seem to need it. Some people are very kind of basic. And some people look for it in other places.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Cool. So your life has been different to the norm, I have to say, like from day dot. And Eric's written a book called Finding Home, and it's a good one, and it's a very interesting insight into. So if you're feeling like you're not getting enough answers to these questions and you want to know more, you can find Finding Home on
Amazon, Barnes & Noble. The last time I looked it up, I got a whole list of books on how to be gay.
Okay.
Not judging, but I didn't write those ones, the record. This is a different book.
I'll put links in the show notes. I'll definitely do
that. You might need to search by the name Eric Peacock as well.
Yes, Eric with a K, Peacock.
Yes, just to confuse me.
Just Cool. So you were homeschooled growing up.
Yes.
And so can you tell us your thoughts about home education? And
home education. Well, my view on education is that there's a toolbox, and in that toolbox there are many things. There's state education, there's the Catholic system, there's Christian schools, there's all sorts of things. There's Steiner, there's Montessori. And in there, there's homeschooling as well. And in the homeschooling compartment, there's also a huge variety of things. There's many excellent curriculum approaches. You know, there's LEM, there's classical education, there's ACE for the Southern Baptists. there's something for everybody in the homeschooling space. There's free learning, there's rigid forms of learning. So everybody does home education differently.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about finding an approach that actually works for your child or children, but also for your family system.
Mm-hmm.
Home education has changed dramatically since I was doing it, or was the crash test dummy through my father's social experiment.
So people are really going to want to read your book now.
Yeah. Look, when we did it, I mean, we're going back now to the early 80s. It was illegal. It was somewhat clandestine. Not that we were ever that way, but we're always public and upfront about it. It was fringe. The kind of people who did it tend to be more fringe kind of people. Some of them were great people. Some of them were frankly bonkers. And we were quite isolated. So I didn't really have any friends till I was 14, which is not ideal. That is not the case today. There's over a million homeschoolers in the United States, so 50,000 in the UK, there's thousands in Australia. There's extensive networks, there's heaps of opportunities for outings and social interactions and specialist learning. So people in the home education community often share their particular skills. So you can actually be taught and mentored by experts in the field, which is not common in school. It's a really positive scene, and I think it's going to increase in relevance and popularity because it's not just a feeling. The reality is that the school system, the state school system, is run by people with a particular set of values and a particular agenda. And if you're not on board with that, then you'll be in conflict with it. And you're handing your kids over to be discipled by other people in accordance with their values. So that's an issue. The Benedict option is a very trendy thing at the moment. I haven't got into it myself. but if that's your thing, then home education is certainly something you would look at or consider in that context.
So you are homeschooling your kids?
Yeah, we're homeschooling our three kids. It wasn't actually our first choice. We did send Jonathan to the local village school. And he did all right initially, and then once he got into the grade levels, it just didn't work for him. We tried, they tried, but it just wasn't working. So we tried different combinations of schooling, homeschooling, part-time schooling. They went to Seabrook Christian School, as it then was, for a time. And in the end, homeschooling just worked better.
Sure. And I just want to say, if you hear background noise, that's Jonathan and Matthew in the background having fun with Hot Wheels cars and playing Lego. And it's good.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
So on that, like, my dad pioneered the home education movement in Australia.
Yeah, he was a massive leader.
Yeah, he was. And Dr. John Barrett Peacock was his name. And he did his PhD in the how and why of home education. And I think it's still the main reference for home education in Australia. I think it's on the internet somewhere.
I'll have a look for that. If I can find it, I'll put it in the show notes. Cool. So you went to grade 11 and 12 in a state school system.
Yeah.
And you were really young.
I was 14.
You were 14. So this is the thing about homeschooling too, is that you learn a lot faster.
Yeah, look, yes and no. I mean, the fact of the matter is that the local state high school wasn't an option for me because I wasn't trained in the application of physical violence. So, and I was fairly bored of being at home. So, you know, Elizabeth College was sort of the next best option.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have hurt me to have spent another year grounding some things like maths. But that's how it was. And the thing about home education is you go at the pace of the child, not at the pace of the curriculum.
Yeah, absolutely. So we had, this was one of the times when Eric and I connected more closely was during those college years, and you were quite a greenie at that point in time, to use probably a derogatory term, sorry if I've offended anybody, but highly into the environment. Tree, not tree hugging, tree sitting in the top of trees.
No, I have hugged trees.
Not only hugging trees. Yes. And so, yeah, and now you've really changed your political views. So what happened?
Well, yes and no. In some ways, I'm not the one that moved. So look, this is something I talk about in the book. We, shortly after arriving in Australia, we headed bush. Yeah, in a van, which people sort of did in those days.
Mm.
And we went up to the sort of northern highlands of Tasmania, and the van sort of rattled down the hill. It didn't have a lot of brakes at the time. And it actually jumped across the creek, and where it landed was where we lived. So we lived fairly close to nature. Mm. And some people, his attitude to nature was rather different. And I guess that was quite formative. And then when I was older, I got into bushwalking and into the environmental scene. I think I was looking for God out there in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I found him.
Mm.
So that was quite significant for me. I mean, that the bush was and is my safe place. It's where I feel most connected, most alive. In some ways closest to God. Mm. So that was important to me. And at the time, the environmental movement was really peaking, and the environmental conflict was really peaking. Mm. So we're talking sort of, late 80s, and then I went to uni in the early 90s, and I was at the pointy end of the forest campaign. I talk about all of that in the book, so I take you on that journey. If you want to know what it feels like, you may or may not agree with it, but if you want to know what it felt like to be there,
yeah.
I talk about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I talk about the reasons why people did what they did. You don't have to agree with them.
No. But it is actually really good to understand or to listen. You never know, you might actually find yourself agreeing in the end if you actually listen to understand. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because at the time everybody was into, you know, we need to blockade and protest and do all this stuff. And I said, well, actually what we need to do is get people down here to have a look.
Yeah.
And so a lot of what I did was run bus tours into the southwest. And it's really interesting because people would be quite anti-green or you know, they might think, oh, yeah, but, you know, we need jobs, all that sort of thing. And then you'd take them down there and you'd just stand them in the middle of a clear felt coop and they'd completely change.
Mm.
Like,
mm.
That. Mm. So there's something about actual experience that lifts it beyond the level of arguments.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yes, so from that standpoint, now people would look at you and say, well, hang on a second, what happened?
Yeah, what happened? Well, a few things happened. Three things happened. Part of it, the whole thing, is it actually has to do with violence and pacifism, which is an odd thing, but the environmental movement at the time was strongly non-violent, and I actually trained as a trainer in non-violent direct action. So I actually trained under Jack Lomax. And the same kind of people in the peace movement and all that sort of... What was the left at that time, which is not the left anymore? My parents were peaceniks, they're against the Vietnam War and all that sort of thing. And I grew up listening to Joan Baez and Bob Dylan and sort of imbibed those values. Mm-hmm. And it sort of seemed... But I had two grandfathers My father's father was a Seventh-day Adventist and a pacifist, and he was in Coventry, which was pretty much bombed to the ground. And my mother's father was Salvation Army, to the extent that he was religious, and he went and fought the Germans in North Africa. So it's always a sort of a question who was right.
Mm-hmm.
So moving it along, I was in Indonesia as part of a Foreign Affairs Department exchange program, and we stayed in a village in Ambon in the Moluccas, the Spice Islands. I talk about all of this. That's where I met my wife, the lady who became my wife. And she became a Christian through that experience as well. We're in a Christian village. Ambon is the only majority Christian province in Indonesia, which is predominantly a Muslim country. Any case, after we came home, we were there sort of just before the fall of the Suharto regime.
Mm-hmm.
Really interesting time. And after we came home, there's a power vacuum in the country. And the local Al-Qaeda franchise moved in with the tacit support of the Indonesian military at the time. And they basically invaded the Moluccas and killed about 10,000 people. And there's a lot of martyrdom. They did attack our village and the local university at Patimura. People were hacked to death with machetes. And, you know, the thing about worldviews is that they usually only change through some sort of confronting or traumatic experience. Mm. You don't argue people out of their worldview. Mm. I mean, just look at social media. I've tried. it's not about that.
Yeah.
And I guess that kind of, after that, I basically made a decision that I was going to deal with the world on the basis of what it actually is, not on the basis of what I'd like it to be.
Mm.
And that was a fundamental shift. And that essentially is the difference between conservatives and progressives. Conservatives look at the world, and conservatives, number one, believe in truth.
Mm.
So there is an objective truth. Mm. We all see it imperfectly and partially, but there is an objective truth. And we need to understand what that is, and we need to adapt ourselves to it.
Mm.
That's the conservative worldview. The progressive worldview is that if we try hard enough, we can fundamentally change reality according to our praxis. So we can basically make anything true.
Right.
And someone needs to go explain that to Al-Qaeda because they ain't convinced.
True. Yeah. Okay.
And that kind of, I think also the whole wilderness experience kind of slotted into that as well because, you know, wilderness doesn't care about your feelings. It doesn't care about your opinions. It doesn't care that you're tired, that you're cold, that you have blisters, that you're bleeding. It doesn't care. You have two options. You adapt yourself to reality or you die.
Mm.
That's it. Progressives don't see the world that way.
So you're not aiming to change the world?
Yes, I am, but I'm aiming to change the world on the basis of reality, not on the basis of fantasy.
Right. Okay.
And so my interest is saying, well, what is real? Mm. So progressives believe a number of things, and basically I worked out what they were. I wrote them down and I asked myself the question, is this true? And none of it is. Literally none of it is. Doesn't mean I don't want it to be true. I think it would be great if we could dissolve all the world's nations and live together in peace and harmony, and you could have open borders, and any number of people from any number of races, cultures, religions and beliefs could all live together in one place, but it's not reality. If you do that, you'll have a bloodbath.
Yeah, okay. I can see where the clash comes now. Yeah.
And to understand that, you need to actually have a basic grasp of history, which progressives don't. Like the first genocide of the 20th century wasn't Hitler, it was in Armenia and it was by Muslim Turks and they slaughtered 1 million Armenian Christians because they could. Mm. And given the chance, they would again.
Mm.
Now, Putin knows this. Okay, so there's some fundamental realities that exist behind the veneer of what we're told.
Mm.
you know, we're given a 2% surface skin, but there are people who actually do understand how the world works, and they're the people who are running it.
Well, some of the people who are running it understand how the world works, do they? I'm not convinced that all of the people who are running it understand how the world works. Okay, so lots of Christians avoid politics because it's an uncomfortable space to be. You obviously don't feel like this is an option, really.
Oh, certainly an option. I mean, it depends what you mean by politics. I mean, human beings are a homo politicus. We are a cooperative species. Mm. And so politics is how we work out how we do things together, basically. Mm. So you could say I'm not a political person. No, you are a political person. You just may not talk to politicians much.
Yeah.
But you talk to other people. So, you know, formal politics is just an extension of that. Mm. It's not something that's strange or weird or these strange people on the television do. It's actually very natural, and we all kind of do it. And over time, we put some structures and some form around that to make it work better, and that's what we now call politics. So what I've found is that a lot of people do want to have a say, or they want to have some kind of influence, or they have an issue that they care about. They want to access that political space, but they don't know how. It's a black box. Mm. It's like this weird stuff that happens, and we're not very happy about it, but we don't know how it works, so we don't know how to access it. Mm. So I've decided to do something about that, and I've developed an online training course, an online training course in civics, which teaches how politics works in practice, how public decisions are actually made, and how you can actually have influence on them. So I've distilled what I've learned from 20 years in working in public service, all of my activist, my activist experience to date, 5 years at university, and put that into an online training course. So that's currently at, I'll give you the URL.
We'll put it in the show notes. It's
3ptraining.com.au, so number 3, letter P, training.com.au. Mm. There's a heap of stuff on there for free. There's a course in international relations, and there's a course in what I call the Our Democracy course. And that looks, it starts with the origins of where our Westminster system actually comes from, which is 9th century Britain.
Mm.
That's where it all basically started.
Long time ago.
Long, long time ago. But interestingly, the same basic issues.
Mm. Because people are people.
Yeah, and look, you know, Brexit, well, you know, the British have been arguing about Europe since the 9th century, so this is not a new problem, it's not a new issue. It's been around for a long time. One of the great things about studying a bit of history is you get less panicked about them, just because you go, oh, yeah. You
know. Yeah, I've seen that before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like climate change. Around for a long time.
This is another thing where Eric and I don't exactly agree.
Well, we might agree more than you think. We need to step it out because, you know, complex issues can't be explained in a couple of sentences.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
I'm not indifferent to climate change. It is an issue. So 3ptraining.com.au, and then I go through the development of that, where the Australian Constitution comes from, how useless it is. And I do that because I find a lot of Christians seem to think we have the American Constitution and we have freedom of speech and all these rights, and we just don't.
Right.
They're not there. So that's worth understanding.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I talk about how decisions are actually developed, how the public service works, how cabinet works, how the parliamentary system works, what goes on in the minds of politicians, what's their framework for how they make decisions, what do they think about when they get up in the morning. So, yeah, I've talked to a lot of politicians in my time. They're just people. They get scared and lonely too.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, I think it must be such a hard thing to be just under that amount of well, at the moment, I just feel like the public is completely against you as soon as you become politician. So it's a pretty tough job from that point of view. I think I said to one Christian politician I know, why did you get involved in politics? And she was said, well, why not? We're Christians and we need to be in every sphere of life. And it's made me think, yeah, you're absolutely right. We can't just ignore politics and hope that that does the right thing without actually actively getting involved. And
so on that point, I mean, Matthew chapter 28, the Great Commission, was to disciple all nations.
Mm.
And I think we've misread that. I certainly have. You know, I've had this idea of, well, you go out and you make converts and you disciple people and you build the church. And that's great, but Jesus actually said to disciple all nations. So how do you disciple a nation? What does it mean to disciple a nation? Well, you have to fundamentally change the culture of that nation.
Mm.
How do you do that? And you do that by taking ground on this, what's called the seven mountains of culture. There's a few people talk about this. It's on YouTube if you want to look it up, Seven Mountains of Culture. But the short of it is that about 200 people determine the cultural climate and direction of a country.
Wow.
Mm. And those 200 people are not Christians.
Mm.
So the church focused on the masses, which is honourable. I mean, Jesus did. The Marxist left figured out how to disciple the country.
Mm.
They took the seven mountains, they have their people in place, and that's why the culture is becoming fundamentally opposed to Christ.
Mm. Yeah, I think there's a bit of both, isn't there? There's a bottom-down, a bottom-up and top-down approach. Both need to be taken.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
So getting back to should Christians avoid politics, well, if you want to disciple, if you want to carry out the Great Commission of discipling the nations, politics is going to be part of that.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Cool. All right, last couple of questions. When do you feel close to God? You've already said a bit about this, but do you have more for us?
When do I feel close to God? You know, it's a funny thing having a relationship with God because it goes two ways. So a lot of, you know, most religions, you're sort of striving to reach some high level of enlightenment or divinity or something. And so it's all about you and your effort. And then some people are very laissez-faire. And it's like, well, you know, if there's a God up there, well, whatever, I suppose I'll meet him someday. Or, you know, he can show up when he wants to, if he wants to. But actually, you know, the Bible says, draw near to me and I'll draw near to you, says the Lord. And so Jesus took the initiative, obviously, in divinity drawing near to us. So it's a two-way thing. God draws near to us, we draw near to him. And when both of those things are happening, then I think that's when we feel close to God.
Mm.
Mm. I don't think there's a formula.
No.
There's no formula for relationships that I know of.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, absolutely. Cool. All right, and finally, what's one thing about God or Christianity that you wish everyone knew?
Well, the first thing about God is that there is one, and he's not mysterious or indifferent or far away. But it's not a timeline either.
Mm.
So we come to God, we don't dictate to God. It is that relationship thing. About Christianity, well, I wish people knew what it was. I mean, nobody has to be a Christian, but I think people have a right to know the foundational beliefs of their culture so they can actually decide about that. I think I wish that people knew that Christianity was hard.
Yeah.
Like, it's not for wimps. I mean, in this church we had this idea, oh, everybody's got to be a Christian. And I was thinking on the way here, actually I'd advise a lot of people not to. And that's not what you're supposed to say as a lay preacher. But if you're not into personal growth, if you don't want to deal with your personal issues, if you don't want moral accountability, if you're not really interested in eternity, and if your purpose in life is to get your kicks cheaply and fast, then don't be a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for you. About God, though, I would say that God is kind and contrary to what some people preach, he won't necessarily wave a magic wand and solve all the circumstances of your life. Well, he hasn't done it for me, so.
It's definitely not my experience.
If it's yours, that's great.
If it's yours, please contact me. I really want to know you.
But he will walk you through it. And I think that's worth a lot. So I could give one example of that if you like.
Please.
I'll give you two. How about
excellent.
Two?
Excellent. Price of one.
So some time ago, I'd had a relationship breakup before I got married. And, I was in a bad way and I went to God. I saved up a little bit of money and I went to God and said, you know, what do you want me to do with this money? And I was thinking to travel and so on, because that's what all my friends were doing.
Mm.
And God said, buy a house, which was not even within my framework to even contemplate doing. So to make it short, I put a deposit down. I found a house I could afford, which was a dump, had two alcoholic bachelors living in it. I put a deposit down. I was then rejected by every bank in Australia. A local credit union gave me a loan. I bought the house. It was a dump. 18 months later, the price of property tripled in Hobart, and I would have been priced out of the market forever. And that being able to hear from God and God caring basically set up me and my family financially for the rest of our lives and helped some other people along the way. So, you know, God is practical. It's not just airy-fairy feel-good stuff.
Yeah.
And this is my story. It's not everyone's. I'm not saying God's going to make you a genius at real estate, but this is just an example that God does care and is involved. And another example was... God told me to go see my brother. We hadn't spoken for about 6 months. Not that we weren't speaking, we just lived very differently, had very different lives and values. So God said, I've got to go see your brother. And it was a really bad time for me. And I said, I'll do it later. No, you've got to go see him. And then it was one of my kids' seventh birthday on the Sunday. And God said, you've got to see your brother. And I've learned to obey that voice. So I did. I went over on the Thursday and we had a short visit and it was pleasant and it was a short interaction. And that was all good. And he died in the early hours of the Sunday morning. And, I wasn't sent to save him. I was sent to say goodbye.
Yeah.
And God knew.
Yeah.
I didn't.
So when you say God said, was it just an impression? Was it a word? Was it a...
It was a persistent impression, a persistent knowing.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I hear from God in a very similar way, I think. And you learn that once you start obeying, you learn this is God. And, when you see things like that happen, it's powerful. It leaves an impression on you. Isn't that lovely of him to do that, though?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, so my last memories of him alive were positive ones.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you so much for sharing deeply with us. I'm sure it's going to bless a lot of people. Thank you.
Thank you.
There's an encouragement. If you feel God speaking to you, go for it. Obey what you hear him say and see what the outcome is. It might be absolutely meaningful and change your life. It might change someone else's. I would love to hear any stories that you have about listening to God and doing what he says. Special thanks to Catherine Joy from Joy Music House for the music for this podcast. Next week, we have more of the audiobook, My Year of Saying No. We're going to talk about your dream life and that dreaded word, should. So subscribe now to this podcast. Feel free to pass it on to a friend and head over to ruthamos.com.au and sign up to my newsletter. And I'll chat to you again next week.